Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for March 23rd, 2026. I'm Phil Adler. Investors have already experienced dramatic initial volatility, but it appears that the war in Iran may also have significant long-term impacts on the financial markets. Confluence Associate Market Strategist and Certified Business Economist Thomas Walsh joins us today to discuss what these might be. Thomas, the length of hostilities will no doubt have a lot to say about the war's ultimate impact on financial markets. In the report this week, titled From the Shah to the Strait, you look at the country's recent history for clues about the possible length and strength of Iran's resistance. We know the present theocratic regime began in 1979 with the overthrow of the Shah. We picture the Shah as an ally of the United States. Is the truth more complicated?
You know, yes, I'd say the truth is definitely more complicated. The Shah did play a key role in protecting Western interests in Iran, but their power owed a lot to U.S. and British intervention. They came to the throne after a CIA-backed coup in 1953 removed the democratically elected prime minister, primarily to ensure that Iranian oil continued flowing to Western markets. So while they were a reliable partner in that sense, their rule created a challenge for Washington. The government's record of human rights abuses and their later pursuit of nuclear capabilities contradicted U.S. preferences and caused embarrassment abroad. Over time, supporting the regime became politically costly for the United States, even though they remained strategically useful.
So, can we say that Iran under the Shah exhibited some of the same resistance to Western tradition and oversight that have been evident later under the rule of the Ayatollahs?
You know, I think that's a fair observation. Even under the Shah, there were strong undercurrents of resistance to Western influence. Many Iranians felt they were imposing Western values and modernization from the top down, often at odds with the traditional and religious norms. This tension helped fuel the revolution that ultimately brought the Ayatollahs to power. Today, however, the sources of resistance are somewhat different. The current pushback stems less from cultural or ideological opposition to the West and more from deep economic frustration due to years of sanctions, weak economic growth, and a severe devaluation of the currency, which have driven inflation and made everyday life much harder for ordinary Iranians.
Did the fall of the Shah in any way change the goals of the United States in the Middle East, or simply make achieving those goals more difficult?
I think that's a really good question. The fall of the Shah didn't necessarily change U.S. goals in the Middle East, but it made them much harder to achieve. Washington's primary objective has long been to maintain stability in the Persian Gulf and ensure a steady flow of oil at manageable prices. Once the Shah was overthrown, the stability was shaken. Their fall created a power vacuum that fueled new rivalry, most notably between Iran and Iraq, and intensified Cold War competition as both the U.S. and the Soviet Union sought greater influence in the region.
Now, the Obama administration tried to use diplomacy to manage Iran's nuclear capabilities. That has evolved to what's happening today, an outright use of force where Iran has responded with its own attacks and also closed the Strait of Hormuz. How important to the world economy is free transportation through the Strait of Hormuz?
You know, it's absolutely critical. About 20% of the world's daily oil flows from this region. About 15% has no other way out of the Persian Gulf except via the Strait. There are two other pipelines, one that runs to the Red Sea through Saudi Arabia, the other across the UAE to just outside the Strait. At the time of this preparation, Iran had attacked the UAE docking facility, causing it to be closed. So far, the Houthis could attack the Saudi East-West pipeline, have not participated much in the war, but if they chose, they could likely close off the docking area for the Saudi alternative. Not only is the current production affected, but this region houses nearly all of the world's excess oil production. So an additional 4 million barrels per day of oil is unavailable. About 20% of the world's LNG comes through the Strait from Qatar. That is now blocked. There are other markets that are affected as well. The region also produces agricultural chemicals that are used in fertilizer. About 50% of the world's urea passes through the Strait. 50% of the world's sulfur, necessary for production of sulfuric acid, comes through this area. Sulfuric acid is essential for mining. And finally, 33% of the world's helium, necessary for semiconductor manufacturing, comes through the Strait. Closing the Strait is Iran's most powerful leverage. But because it is so important, Iran has been reluctant to deploy it, fearful that it would bring the world's militaries to the region to reopen it. That may eventually occur, but it hasn't so far.
Based on your study of Iran's history, is the Iranian resistance likely to be stiff enough and impactful enough to cause long-lasting worldwide economic pain?
So, you know, that is the key question. Iran would not have taken this step to close the strait if it didn't view the U.S.-Israel attack as existential. Thus, it's difficult to gauge Iran's staying power. Iran is suffering severe damage from U.S. and Israeli attacks, but it is important to remember that a nation will usually fight on if they feel the regime's survival is threatened.
Short-term economic impacts of the war included soaring oil prices and also a flight to the U.S. dollar. Are these likely to be long-term impacts as well?
Perhaps. The key item to consider is that if the Gulf states continue to see the strait effectively blocked, they will run out of storage and be forced to shut in oil and gas production. There won't be any place to put the oil and gas. Once a field is shut in, it can take weeks to restart it. We probably have about 10 more days. If exports don't start by then, oil supplies will be constrained for a few months. As far as the dollar goes, it's important to remember that there is no such thing as a dollar in terms of value. It is measured against all sorts of currencies. In general, those dependent on imports for energy has suffered, while those who have it have not. It's more likely that the resource-producing nations benefit from a stronger currency.
How strong will the inflationary impact be?
You know, and again, you're asking very good questions. It's hard to see how we avoid at least some pickup in inflation. Oil and other inputs that move through the straits are built into cost structures of just about everything from manufactured goods to many types of services. We're already seeing at the gas pump and the airline fares have already inched higher because of rising fuel costs. That said, it does not mean inflation will spiral out of control. Some companies with stronger profit margins can absorb part of the shock, so the impact won't hit everyone the same way. As we saw during last year's tariff hikes, many firms are still benefiting from the overhiring that happened right after the pandemic. That's allowed them to hold off on expanding their workforce, which in turn helps keep labor costs in check. That said, while some temporary inflationary effects are likely in the short term, it remains too early to determine their magnitude or persistence in the long run.
Is this all continued bad news for long-term treasury bonds?
You know, not necessarily. If high oil prices trigger a recession, bonds could rally, but I wouldn't position portfolios for that event quite yet. But at some point, bonds could rally.
Is the case for stagflation stronger now, even if the war ends relatively quickly?
While the recent oil shock has certainly increased the risk of stagflation, we shouldn't overlook the economy's underlying resilience. Growth remains solid, driven by accelerating AI investment and steady consumer spending, and there's no clear sign that that's changing just yet. Although many forecasts, including our own at times, have highlighted downside risks over the past few years, the possibility that growth continues to surprise to the upside is equally worth considering. So when it comes to the prospect of stagflation, we may see deflation leaguer for a while, but the stag could remain elusive, particularly if productivity and consumer strength holds up.
Stagflation, in the event we do have it, I imagine, would be bad news for the U.S. stock market. Which sectors might hold up the best?
Generally, energy and miners should do well. Technology usually can hold up as well, but I do think consumer-facing companies might struggle.
The price of gold lagged oil and the dollar in the war's initial stages. Is this likely to continue?
You know, probably not. When the market faces a shock, there's often an incentive to raise liquidity. Investors usually sell what they can, not what they would prefer. If, for example, a portfolio held gold in private equity and needed to raise liquidity quickly, it's much easier to sell gold.
Many European, Asian, and emerging markets outperformed the United States in the weeks leading up to war. Is the party over for them?
Again, it depends on how long this lasts. If it goes longer, then these markets will be out of favor for resource-producing nations, which includes Europe.
Do you think that long-term, the quest to develop alternate sources of energy might accelerate as nations absorb the impact of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz?
You know, I think that is reasonable. You know, during the last energy crisis, we saw the development of oil in the North Sea and regulation designed to reduce oil consumption, such as fuel efficiency requirements. There are significant shale resources in Europe and China. Up to now, there has been reluctance to develop these for environmental or other reasons. That probably won't be the case if this goes on so much longer. You will likely also see a return to coal in some parts of the world and a renewed focus on nuclear power, too.
Final question. Do you think the war in Iran is likely to decrease America's leverage in the Middle East and the world?
You know, again, it's still really too early to tell. If this situation doesn't end well, then yes, it will. But if the regime in Iran fails or accommodates the West, then probably not.
Thank you, Thomas. The title of this week's report is From the Shah to the Strait, and you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.